It's lovely to be with you this night. Thank you very much for allowing us to speak this night and to be with you. Church in the Barn is a very special place in our hearts. So four of you have actually been out to be with us in Guatemala and spent time with us. And Roy's been twice, so it can't be that bad out there. So we are pleased to be with you this night to share what the Lord's doing. Sad to hear the story about Chris, but just be with him. He needs your help. I'm sure you are. But it's this sort of thing is what we see quite a lot of the time in Guatemala. People lose loved ones and family members and all kinds of all things all the time. It's that sort of place. And many times things are very unfair. And that's we have to comfort a lot who are mourning. And that's what the Lord wants from each of us, so bless him. But, you know, we've got a little a video. Is that ready? Okay, we've got a video, and it's about a lady who works with us, who's with us in the mission. Her name is Irma Yolanda, or Irma in English. Irma Yolanda, and she's a really a great woman, a stoic woman. And she's going to, in that little interview, she tells of what she's experienced in the last couple of months. And you'll be able to identify with that. And then we'll go on from there. So if you could just watch this. Okay. For those, could you all see at the back there? You're able to see the words there pretty clearly and the story. Basically what happened with Irma. Irma's been with us for quite a long time now, but one day her brother never came home from work, and they live in a place called Sampango, which is about, I don't know, 15 minutes from us, really, quite close to us. He never returned home. The wife was very, very worried, didn't know what had happened, and what had happened is that he was murdered actually on the bus, and because the wife was so worried, she gave birth that night to her little daughter, and the daughter was 1 month premature. It was quite difficult because of all the stress and everything. She never knew. She gave birth not knowing that her husband had died because the family decided not to tell her. So what happened was that she gave birth to this baby. She then found out what had happened. Obviously, it was very distressing for her. The baby was, she couldn't actually feed the baby. So we actually helped him. We stepped in with milk and sustachy and that sort of thing to actually help the baby. And the baby's doing well now and fine now. But this is a story of actually what happened in the life of Ian. But it's a story that happens in the life of many, many people in Guatemala. Unfortunately, it's almost normal for them. It's quite hard to believe that that's actually normal, but it is actually normal. A friend of ours, whose name is Zaccheo or Zacchaeus, he was brutally murdered about two months ago, before we came home again, in Santiago. We just heard had a message from some friends of ours saying, you know, we're looking for Zaccheo. We don't know where he's gone. Found him in another town the next day. It's unfortunately, it's terribly normal, and people tend to live with this. As Irma said, they live in fear in Santiago. Where we live and work is a red zone. You know, it's a dangerous place. And we ourselves were extortioned shortly before coming home for this little break. So, but you know, the Lord has actually ironed that out now. We're safe again to go back into the building without any worries and that sort of thing. So this is Guatemala. This is, you know, rural Guatemala. This is where that we live, the town where we live, the kind of dangers that people face daily. And so that's just to give you an idea. But that's where we're working. That's where the Lord has called us. You know, it's quite funny. We left here in the UK, I don't know, 13 years ago, something like 13 years ago, and the Lord called us, and we went as a family. And some people will say, well, that's a bit stupid, isn't it? You're going as a family to this most dangerous place in the world, you know, but the Lord called us. The Lord actually spoke to me because I was quite worried, because we had the call. The Lord spoke to us because I was quite worried about us, you know, going and my kids and everything else. And the Lord said, it's all right. I've got you in my hands. You're going to be absolutely fine. And the Lord has always made sure that we're absolutely fine. And we've always been okay, because the Lord is good. The Lord is good. And so I just wanted to actually explain that little thing with before we go on to a little PowerPoint that we have. We got Linda's at the back there. I think she spoke with you this morning, and she's got Theodore in her hand. So I think we're going to, between the four of us, going to explain the PowerPoint to you. But we're very thankful for what you have done as a fellowship, as individuals as well, you know, in supporting us in Guatemala. And, you know, you do help us a great deal. And we thank, you know, give God thanks for you and for what you do. And we just want to show you what has happened. We went out as a family 30 years ago, basically with £600 a month to live on and to invest in the Lord's work. Does that make sense? That's what we had. That's what we had in our hands. £600 a month. That's not a lot of money, really, because food over there is about twice the cost of that it is over here. So we went there, and the Lord called us, and we went in faith. We knew we were meant to go there. And we started living there, and we started giving there, giving to people around us, people in need, people who had terrible needs. We started doing the Christian thing. In other words, living for Jesus, living for him and giving out to people, showing his love, showing his grace to people there. And that's what we started to do. And so right now we have a school of 330 children. Quite incredible. We have a building which is ours. We're building another building. And we have a church of about 80 people. And the Lord's been really gracious. It's all his work. He's done amazing things. And we would like to just share that with us. Perhaps Luke could talk about Juancho could talk about these following slides.
Well, that's where Guatemala is, right there. It's pretty simple. It's right there on that side of the world, just below Mexico. It's very mountainous, it's very beautiful. It's a beautiful country, actually. If we didn't have 15 murders a day and gangs and everything, it would actually be, I think, a hot spot for tourism. And a lot of people do come, you know, tourists do come, and they have certain tourist areas. But as a country, Guatemala is really, really beautiful. We've got volcanoes everywhere. On just outside from where we are, we're 6,600 feet up. So we blame everything on altitude when we're sick and everything. It's usually the altitude. The altitude is the problem. And we're very high up. And if you just drive about 5 minutes from where we are, you're literally on top of the world. And there's volcanoes. We've got three volcanoes, and it really is quite a beautiful place to live. But that is where it is. It's just it's next to Belize, which is an English colony in the Caribbean. And we've got Honduras and Nicaragua. And actually, what I was saying this morning is Guatemala's main problem is violence and gangs. And it's the same problem in these four countries. And that's basically because during the Civil War, 30 years ago or so, a lot of Guatemalan, El Salvadorian, Honduran refugees, it was the same problem in those countries, fled to the U.S., and the men started gangs there on 18th Street. That's where the name 18 comes from. And Mara Salvatrucha, which is it's a spin-off, a Salvadorian. And these gangs grew to be astronomical size, and they got more violent. And I think, is the next slide the gangs? Nope, the next.
Mara Humphreys.
There you go.
Two in the middle, Humphreys.
Gang leaders in Guatemala. Loco is the Loco crazy. Yeah, that's one. And the two upcoming ones are the two little ones there. They're in training. Maybe the next one's the... that's us, but you've all seen us. We're all here, so... There you go. There we go. That's more like it. So I was explaining this morning, there's gang members everywhere in Guatemala. They're absolutely everywhere, and in Santiago alone, we have 30,000 people in Santiago. There's hundreds of gang members, but we have eight policemen for the whole town, and that's four during the day, well, four take a break. And so we have four policemen for the whole lot. And they're about as corrupt as the gangs. We had a meeting with one because we've just gone through an extortion. And extortion is what happens when gangs follow you and they get information about you. And then basically, have you ever, anybody seen Man on Fire? The movie Denzel Washington? Yeah, it's a couple of hands. It's a good movie. That's pretty much life in Guatemala. That movie was about obviously a richer family, but basically in these towns, what gangs do and the way they get their funding is they extortion people. If you got a tienda, which is a shop, they'll extortion you. They'll get money out of you. And extortion is basically they'll ask money from you. If you don't pay up, they'll kill you, and they do. You know, the reality is they do. Every time they come to us, you know, we have the Lord, and the Lord always pulls us out. That's the reality. So you get, and they start off with very young recruits. One of them who was actually in our school is in our school. She's got a terrible home life. She's abused, which is very normal. She's abused by her father and everything. And the thing is, you can't really get them out. We don't really have social services in those parts of town. So, you know, that's their life. And they sell out to these gangs, I guess, because they feel like they belong in these gangs, and they feel like they belong, and they're part of a group. And so they start out very young. They start getting tattoos on different parts of their body. The guys with the tattoos on their faces, they're the most famous ones, and they're the ones that have survived long enough to become basically the leaders and the top guns. I've seen very few of them. I've seen some of them in person. But the ones, most gang members, they won't be tattooed all over, but you'll see tattoos on their chest. When we had the football work, to be honest, when we first went to Guatemala, we were quite naive, and we didn't really know any of these. We didn't really understand the depth of these problems until they actually started extortioning us. And we knew about these gangs, and we knew they existed. And I was always in the cancha playing five-a-side football. That's like the kind of the hot spot, the main spot in Santiago. I was always in the cancha. I was always down there with another friend who was over from here, or Sam, who came out and was with us for 3 years. He's one of my best friends here. And we were always out there, and we, you know, whenever we got into uniform, the guys would always, you take the shirts off, and you get a big 18 across their chest or on their arms. And basically half our team were, you know, murderers. And it never really hits us until I think we had our first extortion and we realized, you know, they meant business. But a lot of the people and a lot of the parents of the kids we work with are gang members. You know, there was a kid in a preschool not long ago who drew a picture, and it was, "What does your daddy do?" And his was, "My daddy kills people." And he wasn't lying either. And you know, we had a gang member just sitting in recently in church in the evening. And we're sort of wondering, you know, what's he sitting in here for? You know, is he here for something? But he came in, he heard the word and went out. And he was later convicted because he was caught dealing drugs. But that is a normal life. So there's so many gang members. And the thing is, in Santiago, as I was explaining earlier, the indigenous people are the oppressed people. And so a lot of these guys, there's no real future for them. There's no future for them. And so a lot of them go into gangs at a very young age. One big area of the mission with the young lads is to work with them and to give them another future. And so they don't end up going into these gangs.
Just an interesting point there. It says impunity rate 97%. Basically, 97% of the people don't actually get punished. So, and we actually found it when the gangs extortioned us, and we went to the police, and went to Ministerio Público, and went to all these places, and we tried to get help. No one did anything. They're just like pushing pieces of paper. It's like council buildings or whatever, you know. I don't know. No, I'm not saying but I was just saying, wherever, it's like pushing pieces of paper this way, that way, every which way, and nothing actually got done. It's just, that's what happens. You know, like the police here, that they turn up and they probably arrest somebody. They don't do that. They just don't do it. It's just like pieces of paper. and that's and not actually doing anything. So it's a big thing in Guatemala. You know, there's all this terrible violence and terrible things, but no one actually does anything. And that's one thing Irma said: nobody does anything. So you really do need the law's protection in a place like that. You really do. And the Lord has done that. The Lord is doing that. The Lord will do that because He's promised to look after us. We can rest in that truth that He does it. But as Juancho was explaining this morning, these young children are in gangs. They get hold of these kids. They get hold of these young kids. They get hold of them from the school. You're talking about 10-year-olds, and we heard a testimony of one this 10-year-old boy being interviewed, and he said the first time he killed something was when he was 10. When he was 10 years old. This is the reality there. They get hold of guns, they make guns, and this sort of thing. So this is the cold reality, harsh reality of it all, really. Yeah.
So 60% of the population live below the poverty line. You can see from the photos that it's so true that 60. I mean, this isn't just they struggle from day to day. This is they life is survival, and that's the fact for all the families that we work with. They're just literally just trying to survive from one day to the next. As you can see on the right, that's their typical homes. And if you can imagine, many children don't have shoes. Sometimes you'll find that a child won't come to school for a week or 2 weeks, and you try to find out, what's going on, at home or what's happened, and it's because they haven't got shoes. So they would, and in the rainy season, with torrential rain, you can imagine what that's like. It's not easy. 80% of indigenous children suffer from chronic malnutrition, causing their immune systems to weaken and preventing their bodies from fully developing physically and mentally. So the girl that Luke was talking about, the one that was feeding information to the extortionists. Sorry? I can point with it. Oh. Wait, I can't get it straight. She's there. That's her. Her name's Hosanna. That's a photo with four of her brothers. I think there's about 11 or 12 children in the family in total. They're an extremely poor family, and as Luke already said, they suffer from terrible abuse, a terrible home life. The video of Irma, this little girl here on the top left-hand corner, she's the daughter of, she's her niece. So she's the daughter of Irma's brother who was murdered, the baby that was born the day after he was murdered. And obviously you can see the photo there after she'd had plenty of, she'd been well fed. And then at the bottom, you've got Nadi and her children. That was about 10 years ago. You've got Catherine, was 18 months old. She barely had any hair. She didn't make any noise. She couldn't sit. She was basically like a vegetable. This is malnutrition. Antonio was about 4 or 5. He couldn't put one foot in front of the other. And obviously, you can see them now. They look all right, size-wise there, but Catherine's about, she's 10 years, no, she's 12, 11 or 12 now, and she's down here. She's so small. Nadi, she looks quite big there because she's with her mum, but Nadi's equally small.
just like to note that Nadi, her husband, or the man she was with, was an alcoholic. And that's a big problem in Guatemala. A lot of the men are alcoholic. They're sort of brought up that way, and when they get to a certain age, they're put on to drink. And so any money that he would earn, he would actually spend before it ever got to the house. and he'd beat her up and stuff like that. The children didn't get any food. They got a lot of problems. Little Antonio still has problems, but we have a little like a special needs class up in the El Refugio right now, and he's actually in that class. He's doing okay, though. He's doing all right. He's doing a lot better. If you can see the picture on the right-hand side, and they're pretty happy. You know, they're happy now. And we actually provide their rent and other things as well. And Nadi works with us, so she's getting that. So a lot of people who work with us, we chose to give them jobs, not because they were useful to us, but we could possibly be useful to them in that we could actually provide them with work, help their self-esteem, you know, give them something to live for, as it were. And so a lot of people, a lot of the women that help Linda in the preschool, because in the preschool, Linda basically runs it, but she has a lot of helpers. They need a lot of helpers to take children to the toilet and stuff like that. And so we can actually employ people in that way to help them in that way. So they don't have to be tremendously skilled. And she's actually on an education herself, Nadi. She's doing she's doing a secondary education right now. She starts this year. But lots of them, a lot of the ladies have started, and they're all learning at the same time, and they got their equivalent baccalaureates or A level equivalent in Guatemala. So we're doing that. You know, we try to build them up. It's interesting. The word for building in Guatemala is edificio, which is edificio. Yeah, okay, edificio, to build up, edify. It says to one another to build one another up. It says that in the word, doesn't it? To build one another up. We have to do that. Build one another up. Always preferring one another. Keep. You know, that's important that we use our words very wisely, and we always build one another up in the Lord. That's what we try to do in El Refugio. We try to build one another up and make them feel good, make them feel worthy. It's really important because many of them don't. They feel like they're nothing. They feel like nothing, but they're not. They're important. Everyone's precious in the eyes of the Lord.
Sorry. This is church. As you see, we are a little bit growing the building, outgrowing the building because we don't have a lot of space. And I don't know if you can see, but we're actually there doing worship, and we have instruments and we have people there. So while you're playing, you have someone there. Worshipping as well, so but it's great. So that means that the world is doing the work, and they actually love being in church. And you can see a lot of youth as well worshiping. And that will be Giovanni, and maybe Luke can explain more about it.
Giovanni's. I talked a little bit about Giovanni this morning. Giovanni's been with us now for 10 years, and we were talking about this. I was talking about it with him the other day, actually, because Giovanni is a prime example of what we want to achieve with every one that comes through, every child that comes through the school. Because he came in, he could have easily had an opportunity to join gangs. He knows all of them. He's very well respected. He's quite a butch kind of guy. Roy knows him well. He's a respected guy, and very cool and calm and collected. And he's just been made a deacon. He loves the Lord. He's come all the way through our program. He's now graduated, and he's now studying in a university in the U.S. It's just a new program that my dad will explain later, where they come and they study with us. And he's also teaching, so he's working for us as well. And he's working in the school and teaching kids and putting back into them. And obviously, five of his brothers are still in the school, so he's teaching back and giving back. And he's just a perfect example of what we want to see happen with all the young people. Firstly, and most importantly, he loves the Lord. And the other is he's really excelling. And as we're explaining a little bit, Guatemala is divided into categories. You have that here still, but it's more like something that would have happened a couple of hundred years ago in the UK. But in Guatemala, we still live in that era. We still live in the era where you have the extremely rich. And I think when Helen and Roy and Rachel were there, and we took them sometimes to these places where you know, where the rich will always be in their bubbles. Because sometimes you go, you know, we feel like a Starbucks sometimes, so we'll go. But the reality is that it's a world that the indigenous will never, ever know. Is they don't know that world. They don't, you know, they couldn't imagine spending £2 or something on a coffee. They don't know that that kind of thing exists. A lot of them have never left the country. We do a lot of cricket work, and we just took, we started the Guatemala national cricket team as well. Aside of all this, cricket doesn't exist in Guatemala. And so we started the national cricket team because we're the only cricket playing people in Guatemala. And now what it's become is we're basically creating the future international side of cricket in Guatemala. Roy actually played in the very first Guatemala cricket game, international game against Salvador. So Roy is actually a capped international cricketer. Yeah, well done, Roy. And that was started all that time ago. And basically, we just did our first trip. We've been praying about this, and we've been saving up money for this. We were able to drive the youngsters that are playing, and some of them love it. And they're actually very good. And we were able to drive them across the border. And they'd never been outside the town, let alone outside the country. And they just had an absolute blast. We stayed in the hotel, the same one Roy and I stayed in when we went there. They couldn't believe it. You know, but we're talking about an average bed here. You know, we didn't stay in a 5-star hotel. You know, we're just talking about an average bed. But they just couldn't believe it. Like, and then the food we went out and we had, you know, like just a Fridays or TGI Fridays or something like that. And they couldn't believe, like, the type of food. And every bite was like, out of this world, you know, we're eating chicken wings. And we were like, oh man, this is some heavy food, you know, after all that cricket. We kind of wanted an ice cream or something. But they were absolutely having a blast. And, you know, and we love to see those things. That's what we live for, you know, just to see those expressions and see them, you know, see that. But Guatemala is a world where they would never have those opportunities. They don't live in that. They don't live in that society. They're not welcome in that society. Quickly, you know, Quancho and I, we work in music, and sometimes we have to go to places. And because I'm white, I'll get treated differently because they think I'm British, they think I'm from London and have tea with the Queen. And I think, you know, they have this idea about who we are. But they'll be like, but your band members, they can't come into where you're in. They can't come into this part of the house, only you're allowed in. And I've had people say that. Or this is a toilet where you use and they have to go out there and, you know, in the garden or somewhere. It's a completely racist society. And so we're divided into that. And at the bottom are the indigenous. They're the bottom. They're the forgotten people, basically, of Guatemala. And you'll always hear people talk about this and that. But the reality is, in Guatemala, a lot of Guatemalans just don't care. And the Guatemala and the indigenous people stay at the bottom. That's their jobs. I said this morning, you know, they will never get another job apart from just being the gardener or getting a job in a house where they're extremely badly paid. We know women that work 12 to 14 hours a day and every single day and will make £80 a month. And they've got families at home that they're trying to figure out how to feed. And that's reality. And that's if they get paid. A lot of them don't get paid. And so you've got this very small percentage of people that live in a complete bubble. And the reality is the rest of the country has to deal with it. And so 60% of the population live below that line. And it will always be indigenous. It will always be the indigenous people that live in that bracket. So Giovanni is a prime example. And with the new program we have in the university, they can actually excel. Because the universities in Guatemala are made to help the privileged exceed, and the ones that don't have it, they can't. It's the same in every single area in Guatemala, even the football. They're useless as a football team. But it's the same thing. You've got amazing talent in the indigenous towns. Really good footballers. They're quick. They're very fast. Indigenous, they're very short, very fast, very tactical. And yeah, but they don't have the money to excel. They haven't got that status. So again, they don't get anywhere. As a, you know, and it's the same kind of things.
Yeah, we had a baptism.
Yeah,
we had a baptism, and we have baptisms every now and again.
And we had to put a swimming pool on the bottom of the on the bottom level of our building, and we had a heater that we brought from the UK, and we actually do have 220 volts downstairs. It didn't work, so Luke and I got really cold that day. But it was wonderful. They loved
not
it.
Not as cold as
they're quite used to it. You see, the people are used to cold showers there, so they're all right. So there we did ride, but we had a great time. And perhaps you want to talk about.
So this is the youth group, and we have like 30 kids max. And you can see on the photo that they're smiling. That's really rare. Because of culture, they're really shy. They're really, really shy. So for them to express themselves is really hard. So you can see the picture there. They're all smiling, having a great time. That's youth group. And It's a wonderful experience that we can have time with them, with the word, but it's awesome to see them change as well, because we had some of them stay in our houses and spending some time with us, and when they come back to their families, like 2 days without them, without seeing no one of their families, they just walk and see them and they just pass. They can't say hi to them, nothing. They don't have expression there. So even if they haven't seen them for a week, they won't say hi. And so that picture is is great, because you can see them all smiling, and actually that something is going in for them. You can see them praying as well. And it's really good, like Luke said. We have all these activities like football, cricket, and that's another way we can go with them and help them as well, because that kind of activities will help them to develop and to actually grow together as a family, as a youth group. And so that's great.
Here we have, thank you, Linda. Doing, I don't know what she's doing there. I think she's conducting.
She's dancing.
Or trying to encourage her young people. Yeah, she's either that or she's either angry at me, one of those things. Most likely she's angry at me. I don't know. But anyway, now and again, we use the little children. Not we use them, but basically, we use the school, in other words, to be an outreach to other people. We invite other people. We invite all the parents. We also invite people from outside the school to come to us. So that night, it was full. We had about how many? 500 people come to this particular outreach, and it was a great time. Kingsley from IGO, he came and he preached, and several people, about 50 people, got saved that night. And it's really lovely. The children perform, they do various things, and so the kids love it, and also the parents can actually hear the word of God as well. It's really important, you know. What we do as an outreach, always an outreach. Everything we do with the intention of getting the word out there and reaching out. It's always reaching out. You know, it's important to reach out as a church or a body of missionaries. That's what we do as missionaries. We're reaching out always, looking out to the other, to others, you know. And here are some children actually responding to a call, you know. This is really good.
We employ 22. Well, we're not employed. Juancho, me, we're not employed. That's Sophie. But we employ 22 staff. A lot of the women, like we said, they don't really read or write. We've taught them how to read and write. So every, like I said, everything we do is to see to see these people really excel. And with the amount of kids, we obviously need extra teachers, because I don't think we could, as talented as we are, I don't think we could teach 330 children all at the same time. And we have a really, really good team, and actually some of them are students that have come through, and now they're teaching also. Henry teaches as well. And how to speak, yeah. But this is the team, and it's a great. We start in prayer. We start in the Word every day. Yeah.
So there's about 120 kids in our preschool, and there's a picture of them. And that includes, this picture includes first and second grade, but there's a lot of them. And there's three classes for our preschoolers. So, yeah. And these are some photos of them doing their worksheets and coloring. And there's some more photos. This is preschool one and first and second grade. First and second grade share the same floor down at the bottom. And this child is, he's 12, and he's learning to count for the first time. The teacher, Marta, is teaching him with the crayons. And this is something that's very common for us to receive children that are very old, who have never studied before. So it's education is not important to the Indigenous. And
when we actually have the kids in, we have to explain to the parents that we were trying to help them, because a lot of them don't understand that. They think, you know, well, what's the benefit of studying when we need to make money as a family? Because you'll see it in Santiago, you'll see pickups. We have pickup trucks, really really old, battered pickups. I've been on one once, and the brakes went, and we were going downhill, backwards. And Sam and I were on it, full of a pickup with about 20 guys, all heading towards a football match in the middle of nowhere with gang members. And we're pummeling down the hill without any brakes. But you see these pickups go out of Santiago every day, and they're going to the fields because we live in the mountains. And they're taking all the workers, and they take, you pack about 25 people in the back of this truck, you know, squeeze them in, and a lot of them are kids. So with a lot of the people that come, we have to explain to them that we want to help them, and that by studying they will be able to get a better job than working in the fields, because they make very little working in the fields. They make around £2 a day, and that is all day, from early morning till late at night. And so we have a lot of children like this one, who's 12, who have worked the fields their whole lives, and now they are finally starting to study, because it's not obligatory to study in Guatemala.
Okay, and this is during playtime, the preschool, and this is a really important time for them, because it's not something that they get to do in their own homes. Most of them don't have toys or even books or anything to play with, so this time is really important for them. We do this every day, every morning for them, for about almost an hour, where they can just play, read books, they play dress up, and they do all sorts of things, and they love it, and it just helps them to just to be a kid and to do things that kids do. And you can see one of our teachers in the photo up at the top, she's playing with them, and that's something that's very hard for the women to do. It's hard for them to get down to the level of the kids and to play. So we have to like encourage them to be a child and to play with them, because it's in their culture to not want to do that, because they're, like we all were saying, they're very shy and quiet. So we have to teach even the women to play. So this is a photo of our assembly in the preschool. Every Friday morning we have an assembly, and that's a time where we teach them a Bible story and just share with them the love of God, which is the most important thing that we do. Education is important, but the number one thing is that they learn about Jesus and they experience the love of God. So that's, our assemblies are really vital for them to learn about Jesus. So. This is a drawing of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle, is that how you say it, Linda? Mrs. Tiggy Winkle. Linda has been teaching the kids Beatrix Potter stories, and they love it. So this little girl drew a picture of her, and the little girl Lucy, I think. We get them to do drawings every week, because it, again, helps them with their imagination and They produce really good drawings. They've gotten really good at it and coloring. So this is really good for this little girl for her age.
Yeah, can I just yeah, sorry, I don't want to butt in there. But, but this little girl, Mariela, she's 6 years old. Mother's dead, yeah? Or father's dead. Or no, father's an alcoholic. Mother's dead, father's an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. She lives with her aunt, and she don't want her either. Nobody basically wants her. But as Linda would say, this is how she comes in every day, with a smile on her face, loves being in the refuge, that's what she can do. So it's really important what we do for people, you know? It's really important what we do for these children. It is a refuge for many of those children.
It's another drawing of Mrs. Tiggy Winkle. Yeah, this one's really good. And Marvin, he's 4 years old, and this is his first year studying with us, and he did this picture of Jesus praying with his disciples. And yeah, he did a really good job. For school.
Brilliant. Now here we have the... this is El Refugio. We can see it in front of us there with the propeller. Looks like a propeller in the front there. It's not. It's actually an extractor fan. We have problems with our neighbours. This is the sort of thing we get. We have problems with our neighbours, and they decided to steal the alleyway, which is to the side of our building, because actually on our papers, this is actually part of our property. And they've actually kind of taken that, and they've also blocked our windows. So we've got our downstairs, we can't actually open the windows. So we've gone to the mayor, and we're trying to sort out all legally, and it's not that easy to do, okay? It's very difficult to do, and people get very upset by this, and people die over this sort of thing. So we're treading very, very carefully. So what we had to do, I thought, well, probably one thing to do is actually put a big extractor fan in. So that's what we did, to actually, because it's not like a room back in England. You know, these kids don't wash, most of them. And so you've got to imagine, this is reality for us. You know, we're talking about a lot of these kids will not wash, you know, from one month to another. And if you don't have fresh air going through it, it's really quite difficult to work in that kind of environment. Well, for me it is, anyway.
Get a bit stinky.
Yeah, it is really. It's like a, yeah, it is really something. Yeah. Anyway, so we put an extractor fan in there. These are the sort of things that we have to do, you know. But these are all the children that you'll see in El Refugio in the afternoon. It's quite a lot of children there. It's about
200 kids.
Yeah, 200 kids. 190 children, 210 children, something like that. So we have third, fourth, fifth, sixth grade with the primaria or the primary school, and then we have all the older kids as well. And they come in the afternoon. We've got it down to fine art now because we use the same building for all the children. In the morning, we have the little ones, and they leave at 12:30, and then the ladies quickly clean everything up. And then Gavino comes in and brings all the tables in, because we can't use the same tables. You can't use these little tables for the big ones, you know. So, and as you saw in the video, kids coming in and out with their desks. Well, these desks we keep in a room opposite their refugio, you see. So we have a room that we hire, and they have to go over. So the kids come, and they have to go to the other side, pick up a chair, or pick up a desk. Yeah? So we have to work like this. So it's all pretty well, you know, it's worked down to the minute, really, or the second, really. But these are all the children. It's quite a lot of children there. We don't have a lot of space at all. But we have to work with what we got, you know? We have to work with what we got. At the moment, this is what we've got. We've got El Refugio, and we've got four levels there, and we've gradually, over the time, managed to build up. And we've got four lovely levels, but it's still not big enough for the whole school. So we have to have school in two parts. Yeah, so as you can see, there's not exactly a lot of room there. And there's Sophie teaching English to two classes at the same time. So
there's Dad too. You can see him then.
I can't see him. Oh, there's me.
No, being modest.
Yeah, okay. Well, and here's Juancho teaching. We've got Luke teaching there. We've got Juan Jose. And who's the other one?
Isis,
yeah.
One of our teachers is actually called Isis, but it's It's yeah. not. It's not because of that.
Yeah.
But we say Isis, so it's a little different. Huh.
Yeah, as you can see, we've got the stairs there on the left-hand side and all the desks in front of them, and that's in the kitchen area on the third floor. So it's not a lot of space, you know, but, you know, we're missionaries. We do what we can, working with what we can at the time to do what we need to do. Things are never perfect. You'll never have the perfect place, but, you know, we just go on with it. We have to work with what we've got in hand. There's some more pictures of some children there working away. Okay, Juancho, I think you can.
So this is the university group, and this will be, will be really rare for someone in Santiago, because in Guatemala we have universities, but majority of them are private, and you have to pay for them. And the one that is actually free, you have to pay for the books, and you have to pay to get there as well. So for them it's really hard, and if you get in, as for them, because of the surname they have, even if they get a higher note, they will be classed to the bottom, just because surname. So they will put always at last. The bottom will be them because of the surname they have.
They can tell they're indigenous through their surname.
They can tell they are indigenous because of the surnames they have. So they will always leave them behind, always leave them out all the time. So for them, getting into university is almost impossible. So Ross has a contact that actually helped him get in the scholarship for studying online in the U.S., so they can do it there in the refugio, in the refuge. They can do it there at night time. And they all get together and they start studying in university, online. And that's really rare in Santiago. Like, that will be the only opportunity they can have right now. So it's kind of really, it's hard, because they think it's going to be the same as school. And they can't understand why it's, like, more difficult, and why they have to do this. Some of them, they want to give up on the second day and stuff like that, because they're like, I did it. I graduated from school, and that's it. But, again, we have to teach them that they have to work hard, and that this is going to help them even more. So it's actually amazing.
It's interesting, but when we took these five lads, come on, yeah. To San Salvador to play cricket. Funny, you not believe this, but the BBC came to actually do a program on us. They came, I don't know, Luke seems to have these contacts, I don't know. He just told me, oh, by the way, the BBC are coming in our car, so okay, great, that's gonna be relaxed, isn't it? So anyway, we took these two cars. Juancho was driving one, and I was driving another. We went to San Salvador, and this young fellow from the he works for the BBC, the Telegraph, and other people. And he came because he was interested in us doing cricket with indigenous people, you know, poor indigenous lads. And it's quite rare, because the funny thing is, in all of it, the last words he said to Luke were, well, okay, we saw cricket, he interviewed a lot of people, he interviewed the other teams, he interviewed the El Salvador national team and everything. But he said what the impression that he was left with was what lovely young men that we had. And that was the most important thing for me, that these lads showed something of the Lord in them.
The lads spoke. They gave a testimony after, because they obviously spoke about leaving. It was an experience. It was an amazing experience. And we only drove 4 hours. It's not like we flew, you know, hours. Salvador is literally just next door. It was like driving to Wales or something. But for them, it was a once in a lifetime opportunity. And we're pushing it so that it carries on and everything. But their one thing was that they could be a witness. To everyone that they come in contact with. And actually, the one thing that the guy from Salvador I'm sure he was impressed with our cricket, but we didn't play so well. So he came away and he said, I'm really impressed with your young lads. I've, you know, their attitudes and everything he's like has really touched me, and that was really good, yeah.
Because it doesn't matter if someone goes to university, it doesn't matter what they do. You know, the most important thing is that they know the Lord, and they're good people. You know, and that as they go on in that. And we obviously, that's what we want people to. And actually, when people are looking for their careers and everything, it's what do you want me to do, Lord? You know, what is it you want me to do in this life? Where do you want me? Where do you want me? Because so many people, what do I want to do? What am I going to do? What's for me? But, you know, what do you want me to do, Lord? You know, what do you want me to do for you? And that was really precious for us. Because, you know, that recommended, because some of those kids have been with us for several years. When some of these kids graduated this year, several of them had gone or had been with us for 10 years. You know, had been with us since they were little children, you know, when we still had like five, you know, two kids in third grade and four kids in fifth grade and stuff like that. They'd been with us from the beginning. And that was something, you know, they'd been with us that length of time. And they're showing something of Jesus in the life. So it's really important. Luke.
I don't like this slide.
Okay, well, I'll talk about this. Okay, no, okay. We have a sponsorship program. And it says here, help change the... Many of you do support us, and we're grateful to you for that. It's really important, you know. It's just important to have that regular bit of money coming in that we can actually help some of these kids. So many of you would do that, and because they need support, they need money. You know, we only have a third of the children actually supported. Many of the older ones don't have any support, but it's important that we get that support, you know. And that's what people can do back home, you know. If a little bit of money each month goes a long way for us. It really does. So, yeah.
This is the new refuge. It's beautiful. this is it. It's finished. No, we're building a new building. Many of you have already seen this. We're building a new school and church. And we're going to have a little space we're trying to get a little space as well for a small three-a-side football bit at the very bottom. But when we bought it, it was completely downhill. So it's been leveled off. We've just built the carport. The cars are going to be inside with the doors shut because we're in a new gang zone. We're in gang 18 zone. And now we're heading off to Mara Salvatrucha zone. So we're going to get both gangs saved in both areas. We need 30,000 more to finish, so please pray, put that into your prayers. As we're finishing this building, it's going to be a lot bigger, and you know, it's growing every year. The work just keeps growing, so we'll need a new building at some point, because I don't think we can put another level on the other one, as we're already on four, and we get a lot of earthquakes, so...
It's quite interesting. We had an architect design this for us, and she came back and she said, "Got this lovely design for you, and it's going to cost you $260,000." I thought, "Well, that's really great. Thank you." We don't have that sort of money lying around. So anyway, we went to Max, and Max is a man in our church, and he's a great builder, and says, "Well, could you hear the plans? Can you do something with this, Max?" And he said, "Yeah, I can do it for £20,000. His math isn't brilliant. It's going to cost a bit more than that, okay? Okay, I think it's going to cost in total possibly about £45,000. That's pretty good, though, for the type of building we got. And so this is actually here, you can just see there, that is actually ground level, that there. So all this is basement. So we've got three rooms there, which is basement, and the cars will go over the top, will come straight in off the road. When you come to here, you'll see that's not a football pitch. That's actually, that's going to be our building, you know. We've got a nice long, it's about 10 metres by 20 metres, and it's going to be a multi-purpose. It's going to be a room like this, I think, really. We can put dividers up between classes and and then we can have a big room at the same time, like a multi-purpose type building. And that's what our intentions are, really. Got two trees that are still there and they're going to be in the middle. Don't really want to get rid of them. We already got rid of the banana tree. We've got an avocado tree there. So and that's very, that gives a lot of fruit there. So
that'll
don't
be our next business.
Yeah. But that's Guatemala. That's Guatemala. And so you've got beautiful views at the back there. You can see there all the mountains and volcanoes. We can see volcanoes 80 miles away. And it's going to be lovely for the children. It's going to be great for them, really.
That's Theo. Theo there is actually 2 years old, and the other kids around him are 4 and 5. And when we see him grow up, one, he is tall, but the other is obviously they're so tiny, and with the malnutrition, you really see the difference between the sizes. But yeah, that's it.
Sorry? Well, we went to the police, and they sent us to another department of the police. And we spent a day at the police, we spent another day at the other place, and then we had to do this, then we had to do that, and we had to go everywhere, and then still nothing was done.
No.
No. So what you do, basically, with an extortion, if someone's threatening you, what you do is you don't pay. But you see, when you've got people threatening you, and threatening to take your life and stuff, and you've got little children and sort of thing, it does, you have to be very, very careful. So what we did is that, like, we would go in, we'd go in different cars, we swap cars, yeah? So one day we go in one car, another day we'd go in another car, then we go in at different times, this sort of thing, to confuse, if anyone's watching us, it would confuse them. Or then we might get a taxi in. So that's what we did for a few days. We got a friend who was a taxi driver. Can you take us in today? This sort of thing. We put cameras in the building. So the cameras are now facing up the street and down the street. We've also got cameras inside. So people know that actually we're watching, and we can watch it on our phones. We can watch it now, actually. We've got a little service going on there, and we're actually watching the service, checking they're all behaving themselves. Because we have But we can do that. So we can watch it on our phones. We can actually watch what's going on now live in Guatemala because of the cameras. That they're incredible, isn't it? Really, because the
you just change your routine.
Yeah.
You just change the routine because they monitor the routine. Yeah. Because obviously the threat we had this time was, well, it was everything, wasn't it? It was kidnapping and then death and more death.
I mean, we don't laugh like that at the time, you know. Yeah, came
this one they came to us came, yeah, and they put it through into the classroom.
Yeah.
And so a kid picks up the letter and gives it to the teacher, and the teacher gave it to us, and we read it out. And then you just think, oh. But you go to the police, and the police are just as corrupt. And they don't do anything, and that's just the story of it. But the Lord is with us.
Yeah.
And
the thing is,
he's always with us.
Yeah, you have to stand resilient and say, no, I'm not going to pay. Because what they're doing is they're fishing. They're trying this area, they're trying another area. It's like if they fish in one area of a pond, for instance, and there's no one bites, they go somewhere else. And they go somewhere else. Yeah. That's what we do.
Yeah, and you don't show that you change too much. You just carry on. Yeah. Otherwise, they'll know that they'll continue. The only thing we do is keep the little ones... Keep the little ones mainly out of it for a week or two, and then we will go in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it was a bit frustrating because we got into school, and everything was going really well. It was good, wasn't it?
Yeah,
it was.
Yeah.
It was going really well, and we got the university group going in the evening. We were meeting two evenings a week, and I was staying with them as well, and that was going really well. And then suddenly we had to stop everything because they were, you know, they're on our backs. And that creates, well, the trouble is with people, you know, it's like if you stopped a meeting in the before, you know, say you had a meeting here every Wednesday night, and you stopped that for 4 or 5 weeks, you know, when you open it again, you're going to get trickles, people coming back, and they lose momentum. And that's with people, the type of people we work with, it's important to keep momentum. It's important always to be there, you know, something constant, something consistent. So it was difficult, but we did, you know, we're back, you know. Yeah.
Do you feel that you've got protection in numbers, you know, if you're a group working? Do you think they feel that you're more of a problem because of your strength in numbers there?
I don't really know. I don't think a lot of them have enough. It sounds terrible. I don't think a lot of these guys, one, they're very young, but I don't think they have enough brain cells to, it sounds bad, but I don't think they really think of it like that. I think they look at us and they think money, because we're white. And so they think money, and they probably do think that we're annoying. You know, from the comments we've heard and from what has been relayed back to us, they were annoyed with us that we're there. They don't like that we're there. You know, and if we don't go, they'll just, you know, they'll do whatever. But they haven't, nothing's happened. And
there's a lot of witchcraft where we are. Actually, we haven't even mentioned that, have we?
No.
We haven't mentioned that. A lot of witchcraft. And that's, you know, when you get this sort of thing happen in a community, this sort of, this terrible, you know, murder, all this sort of stuff, there's usually something behind it. And there's a lot of dark forces there. And sometimes you can come into Santiago and you can feel that darkness. Because there's a lot of witchcraft, a lot of people. A lot of people putting curses on others and stuff like that. It's happening all the time. And that's pretty much traditional with the Mayan people. You know, it goes back centuries. Right, you know, witchcraft and that sort of thing.
It's mixed with Roman Catholicism there as well.
Yeah.
Because the Roman Catholics, they allowed them to continue doing their certain practices. So you have it, you have a mix. So you have the Roman Catholic Church, and inside it you'll have lots of, they'll do all kinds of offerings and all kinds of witch doctor practices. And so there's a real mix. There's a lot of superstition.
Yeah, an awful lot.
So and you even get it in evangelical circles as well.
Yeah.
People mixing, you know, trying to mix, and people... You know, because it's part of their culture.
So you do get that, and I think that's something we didn't even mention tonight. But that is actually at the base of everything, really. At the base of everything is the spiritual darkness, and that's what causes the murder. That's what causes the dysfunctional families. That's what causes all the poverty. So much poverty, and of course, a lot of the poverty is political, because Guatemala is beautiful. You know, it's full of money, but there's a certain percentage that have all of it, and a huge percentage have none of it. You see, you know, and these men go off and work in the fields, and they're great, and they know how to work. These men, they do beautiful work. You know, in the fields, they do beautiful work. But at the end of the day, they get like £2.50 or something at the end of the day. And when you've got to look after a family, that's not very good, is it? And yet they do lovely work. They do beautiful work. And also the sort of thing that they will do, the indigenous, is at the back you'll see some things are made there, beautiful tapestry, not tapestry, what do you say? Embroideries and that sort of thing. They know how to make cloths. The women will do that, and they don't do it with machines. They do it with their, what do you call it? They weave it, and that's another way they will make some money that way. And they try to sell these things in the tourist areas. But we've got some things at the back there that you can see. Buy if you feel so inclined, you know. Juancho, Sophie's husband. Juancho was brought up in quite a different area in Guatemala, and he was brought up in a more of a middle class home, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Your father is like accountant of Chiquitas, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The bananas. Chiquitas so bananas.
His experience is totally different to anything of these, what these people experience, but he's really wise, and he's got a great heart for our people. And he used to teach at university, sound, didn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's got a lovely heart, and he's been working with us, and Luke and Stephanie, and we all work together for these people. But it's wonderful that Juancho's actually come through. He became a Christian a while ago, didn't you?
Yeah.
Because he was with Luke and doing all the music and stuff. He's got a lovely heart for these people and understands an awful lot. Would you like to say something?
Yeah, what happened is that normal watermelons obviously won't be at those zones like Santiago. Like, my family won't even get near Santiago because obviously you know it's dangerous. And if you're born in Guatemala, you know that you have to watch your back. No matter if you have money or you don't have money, you have to watch your back. That's what you do. Because what they want you to live in is in fear. Because violence and all these things. And gangs are a huge part of the control of the country. They control everything. So they will make you fear, and obviously because of that, they will try to gain control of you and your family and the rest of the country. So for me, I've never been in Santiago before, so it was quite an experience the first time I went there. I was just there, and obviously the first time I went to church, I was like, this is a dangerous place, you know? And I was like, and you grew up, like, you know, I have to watch my back. And it's like, I have to watch everywhere right now. Because, you know, I mean, for a normal guy, you wouldn't even dream to go there. You know it's a red zone. So it's not normal for me to go and be with them. And even though we look like the same, they know I'm not from that place. This is something that happens there in the culture. In that town, all of them know each other. They all know each other. And even their own families are gang members. And they know they are gang members, but they won't say anything. So they will keep everything secret. And it's quite confusing. And it's really hard to work with them. But as they were saying, God is always protecting us in every way. And the way to deal with extortion is actually that we prayed and we actually took a break so we can actually seek God, and he will show us the way. And he did. He will show us the way. And when he said that it was all right to go in, you can feel it, as Ross said. Sometimes you go into the town and you feel all right, and sometimes you go into the town and you feel like something is not quite right, so you just go back. It's like I said, the first time I went there, I was like, I have to watch everywhere. And sometimes you feel like you're okay. But now it's awesome, and I feel like they are part of my family. And that's the most important part.
The thing is, these people are difficult people, you know. I mean, if they kill each other, they're not easy people to deal with. You know, I mean, joking aside, and that's the way it is, and they can be difficult, and a lot of people can appreciate us and really appreciate what they have and what they do. There can others that don't. They try and take advantage of you, but that's just the way it is. The thing is, Jesus went to everyone, didn't he? And Jesus loves everyone. It doesn't matter what we have or what bad is there, you know, he wants that everyone should be saved. He came and died a horrible death. You know, not just for the righteous. He came to save the vilest of sinners, and that's really and in some of the situations that we find ourselves in, it can be quite difficult sometimes because you say this is unjust, this is bad, and everything else. But at the end of the day, you know, Jesus wants us to reach out to all people, because that's what Jesus does. And understanding Jesus' love is sometimes quite difficult because he loves unconditionally. He loves us all. He loves us all. And, you know, who are we to say that this person cannot be saved because they're like this to me or whatever? God loves the sinner. God loves them. And it's important always to remember that. that, you know, God loves everyone. He came to save us all. And that's really important. You know, God's love reaches to the uttermost. And that's, we'll finish there, I think.